Everyone, and welcome into another episode of Investing in Real Estate. I'm Clayton Morris. So glad to be back with you and so glad to finally be back from all of the Republican and Democratic convention craziness and back actually at my home office again. Whew, I've been up at 2 in the morning and having to go through security lines and craziness and shuttles, the Secret Service, and all that goodness. So I'm glad to be back and talking real estate. And today we've got a great episode lined up for you. We've got a great case study episode with an investor who now, I believe, is about to hit 6 properties. I think he currently has 4, and he's about to add another 2 onto that list, which is fantastic. My guest this week is Josh Koth. He is out of Fargo, North Dakota. And Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Clayton. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, and it's great to catch up with you again. So how's first of all, what's it like investing up in Fargo? Is that where you currently have a few properties? What's it like up there?
Yeah, it's interesting. We have kind of a very stable real estate market here. It's kind of slow and steady. Unemployment's low. Lots of, you know, great jobs and lots of technology jobs. And 3 colleges here in town as well. So the rental market is fairly decent. The only problem is prices are really high right now. The market's very hot, very fast. So in order to get anything locally, you have to be able to move pretty quickly and just look at a lot of properties before you can possibly get one. So it's a pretty quick market up here right now.
Yeah, pretty fast, and having to rely on realtors and having to go that route. Exactly. So we'll get to your market in a little bit, and we'll talk about some of the deals that you've been doing. I want to kind of dive into the anatomy of some of your deals and how you structured them and how you, you know, what sort of ROI you're getting, et cetera. But take me back. How did you decide to get into real estate investing? Was this something you always knew you wanted to do?
Yeah, actually, my uncle had about 5 rentals up by a local college here. And it was interesting because I knew that it was a great thing for him financially, but the downside was he would complain about them constantly. Oh, I can never leave the apartments. I got to watch the apartments. It seemed like it was a huge burden. So I knew that there was a great method of investing there, but it was kind of colored by his bad experience. So I knew I had to figure out a different way. So as I explored, purchasing rentals, I knew that I had to have a property manager involved. And, you know, as long as you have that, then it removes all that, what he perceived was of the burden of managing those properties. So that was really the key I found. So
right.
I make it, you know, a practice to never consider a deal without property management figured in. And that was my way that I could scale that up.
And that's really smart because I think, you know, a lot of people who start out, obviously I've done an episode where I talk about the best properties not being in your backyard. And most oftentimes that's true. And occasionally people happen to live in good real estate markets, but most of the time it's not true. For you though, and I think the biggest mistake, you know, new real estate investors make is that they don't get property management. You know, I call it the allure of that first property syndrome where they think, oh, you know, I can do it, or I've got a family friend living in there, and it's fine, I'm just going to manage it myself. But you right out of the gate, knew that you wanted to hire a property management team.
Yeah, I knew that, first of all, I didn't want to be dealing with tenants. I just knew from my uncle's experience that wasn't how I wanted to spend my time, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to scale that. You know, you might be able to manage 1 or 2 properties, but my goal was to, you know, acquire many more than that. And, you know, once you get 5 or 6, even locally, that becomes a very huge time consideration. So I knew that wasn't feasible. So I had to figure out deals that worked only with property management. So that's the strategy that I chose right out of the gate.
So tell me about that strategy. Number one, I'm curious the questions that you would ask a property manager. You know, first of all, how did you find your property management team? And we're talking Fargo, right? Is where you found your property management team?
Yeah. It's part of my path to getting into investing myself. I took a little seminar with some local investors here that I was in a networking group with. I don't know if you've ever heard of BNI, Business Networkers International. I was a member of that for my job. I'm self-employed as a photographer. And I met a couple of gentlemen through that who invested locally here. And they had a little 5-week class on investing. So that's kind of what – where I made some connections there, and they recommended a property manager locally. So that's, I just kind of went with their recommendation and didn't try to reinvent the wheel.
Now, what kind of fees are you paying with them? How does that all work?
Yep. There's a lease up fee. It's actually kind of nice how they do it. I believe it starts at $150. And then if a week goes by, then it drops to like 125. And so every, you know, they're incentivized to get good quality tenants in there quickly. And we pay a 7% property management fee here locally.
Okay. Yeah. People ask all the time, like, what, you know, what is typical? And typical mm-hmm. for property management is going to be, you know, between 8 and 12%. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's going to be right around that 10% a month for property management. What sort of questions did you ask? Did you kind of take them through any kind of an interview process, or based on the recommendations of friends, kind of work for you?
Yeah, I just kind of, they were a friend of mine as well. They had been a client in my photography business, and I knew them personally. So it was really just a, hey, let's just do this deal. I probably didn't do my due diligence. You know, had I not known them previously, I would have done more, but I trusted them, and it was a local referral. So, but I did ask the basics, you know, what's your policy when someone doesn't pay? You know, what kind of checks, credit checks, criminal checks do you run? And I was satisfied by all those answers. So,
right. Right. And, you know, we talk about 2008 being different than 2016 or 2017. Mm-hmm. It's a different animal now. You've got a higher quality, you know, class of tenant, quite frankly. Back in mm-hmm. 2008, anyone with a pulse could get a mortgage. So if you had to rent back in 2008, chances are there may be something wrong with that person, you know, with right. their credit must have been terrible, or who knows, you know, they didn't have a stable job. So landlords back in 2008, because everyone could get a mortgage, said, you know, hey, if you want, oh, you're going to rent for me? Great. You're going to pay me $25 a week, and I'll just have to keep coming out to your house to collect cash every few weeks. Like, fine. And literally landlords were, you know, property management companies were hiring people just mm-hmm. to drive around and just pick up cash every week from tenants in order to make up their total sum for the month. What a Wild West time that was.
Yeah. And the flip side, or the, of the real estate market being very hot and prices being high here in Fargo, is that rental rates are also higher. So as long as you can buy right, you can have some decent ROI, you know, from that as well. You can benefit from that hot market as long as you can get, you know, a really good deal up front.
Let's talk about your ROI. So mm-hmm. for new listeners who are new to the podcast, ROI simply is return on investment. So cash in, what is your cash out every year? And I look at it on an annual basis. So for you, cash into your first deal, what sort of cash were you getting out? What is the ROI that you were getting out of your first deal?
Well, this actually worked out nicely how I found you and your investing team. Because it kind of allowed me to set a standard that, well, I have to match that or exceed that. Otherwise, I would just, you know, invest through your company, you know, in Indiana, which I have two properties through you. So that's nice because it sets a nice high standard for me locally. So it's kept me out of a lot of deals that I may have previously purchased had I not chatted with you first.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah. So it sets a nice high bar. So I pass on a lot of things just because I say, well, you know, I would rather just, you know, buy another property through Clayton. So I only buy deals here locally if they really make sense. Just to give you an example, you know, I try to use the 1% rule, you know, when I'm evaluating properties. So if the rent isn't equal to 1% of the purchase price or more, then I just pass pretty much immediately.
Hmm. Okay. So the 1% rule, for those of in our audience that aren't familiar, so 1%. The rent has to equal 1% of the total all-in cost of the house?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, that eliminates a ton of properties right out of the gate. So it enables me to sift through the what's available locally a lot quicker. So, and another little formula that I've kind of worked out is that I try to get $100 of cash flow for every $10,000 that I invest. And that seems to be just kind of a good rule of thumb as well.
Right.
To quickly evaluate things. So
that's a good one. My father-in-law, and when he purchased his first property through us and through my team, you know, he's out in California. And mm-hmm. I think 2 years ago we were having dinner, and, you know, he was just asking. He never really asked, and I don't push our properties on anyone, you know, if you, mm-hmm. you know, and he was just asking, and he owns a few rental properties in different parts of California and other places. And he said, you know, he does that same formula, $100 of cash flow for every $10,000. And I told him the prices on mine and the cat, and he just like dropped his fork because it's, you know, it's crazy dealing with like California taxes and the barrier to entry to get into properties. I'm curious, in Fargo, what is the sort of the average cost of a property that you've been acquiring up there?
I've been trying to stay under $100,000, which is rare because those properties do go very quickly, but I've been able to react quickly at being self-employed as a photographer. I can kind of run and look at properties very quickly, and I know a few realtors locally, and I'm on a bunch of email auto lists when things pop up. So being able to react quickly is kind of been the key. But the first property I purchased was for $79,000, and I put about $10,000 into it.
In rehab?
Yep. And that's another key I found too, is it has to be cosmetically not the greatest in order for me to have a chance, really. Because if it is move-in ready, you're going to lose out to somebody that's willing to live in it and buy it as a owner-occupant. So,
oh, that's a great tip. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're really then fighting against not only investors, but you're also fighting against people who want to, you know, move their kids into a good school district and live there.
Yeah. So the first one I purchased, you know, the bathroom looked just very poor. It needed a fresh coat of paint, but it was all cosmetic. And it was, you know, and my uncle, back to my uncle again, he is a retired contractor as well. So he works with me and I hire him, and he's kind of my, trusted advisor as far as the cost of rehab. And actually, you know, we do some of the work ourselves, you know, some of the, you know, easier, you know, painting and things like that. So that was my sweat equity way of getting into the first one. So
that's great. That's similar to kind of what I was doing in Michigan, just outside of Detroit with my first few properties, and mm-hmm. having a sort of a family friend who was a great contractor, and, you know, having to jump kind of quickly on deals that were coming in through, coming in through a realtor. And being able to jump quickly, whether it was a short sale or it was a foreclosure or something else like that. Yep. So are you finding in your neighborhoods where you're buying, did you see like a lot of foreclosures and or problem properties in your neighborhoods?
Yeah, I believe the first one I purchased, I'm not sure what happened. I think they got foreclosed on, maybe due to some criminal issues. The neighbors had some input on that. You know, you can always find some good information chatting with the neighbors. You know, so the previous occupants may or may not have ended up in jail. So I think they got foreclosed on, and, you know, but it's a nice little neighborhood, right? 3 blocks from one of our big colleges here. So, I knew it would be a good rental, based on the neighborhood and the purchase price. And, so that rents for $950 a month right now. So that's, it's performing well.
That's great. That's great. So had the difficulty in finding deals, talk a little bit about that. Mm-hmm. And obviously one of the things that you're able to, when you talk about moving quickly, does that involve having cash on hand?
Yeah. So basically I looked at my retirement accounts, specifically my IRA. I had about $200,000 saved up, and I was just looking at the long-term retirement horizon. I'm 44 years old, and I knew in 20 years I wasn't going to be able to save up a large enough chunk of money to live off the income, the interest that would spin off. So I could just kind of see down the road that wasn't going to be a good enough strategy. And I started doing some side-by-side comparisons of if I just pulled all the money out, paid the taxes and the penalties, and invested in real estate, you know, some side-by-side comparisons over the next 20 years based on, you know, a 7% ROI for my retirement accounts versus minimum of 12% investing in real estate. And I got that number from you. So I knew that was a minimum, you know, ROI that I could look forward to in real estate. So, and the comparisons, you know, in 5 years, I think I was broke even after paying the fees and penalties. And then it just took off from there. So when I showed that to my wife, it was kind of a no-brainer. So I actually pulled all my money out of my retirement account. That was a tough conversation with my financial planner, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. They don't like hearing that, yeah.
I've since converted that. You know, I'm about to close on two more next week. So I'll have a total of six properties, and I've converted that basically into $2,000 a month passive income. So, you know, I'm on the right track, and, you know, you have your freedom number. And for me, that was a real game changer as far as simplifying how to look at, you know, changing active income into passive income. And I think my number is right around between 10 and 15. So that's where I'm headed. That's my next goal.
That's great. So your freedom number, and people can download the freedom number cheat sheet if they just go over to morrisinvest.com/freedom. We also have it in the show notes. But, you know, when you look at those properties and you think, okay, these are the monthly expenses that I have. These are, we add up our monthly expenses, you know, groceries, you know, gas in the car, rent, mortgages, all of those things that you're adding up, and then padding it a little bit with just like a little bit of surplus for entertainment, maybe travel, those sorts of things. And then thinking, you know, how many rental properties would it take for me to achieve financial freedom? So 10 to 15 properties is pretty average from what I hear when we talk to, you know, when I talk to our customers on the phone and our investors, that's kind of a pretty common number. So,
yeah. Yep. And it was how you had that simplified just really gave me some good clarity on that and allowed me to, you know, see that that was an achievable goal, especially after I started converting my retirement funds into properties. Then it just kind of took off from there. So,
well, I think that's a really important thing that you just told us, because when I talk, you know, we talk to investors sometimes, maybe they've got $50,000 to work with, or maybe they have zero. You know, I heard from an investor recently, so I you know, said, I've got money in the retirement account, but I don't have any cash on hand. So that process of converting the penalties and so forth, get a little specific on that. I think people just get scared. They think of this like lockbox. There's a lot of fear around that retirement account, because I think we've been told that we need to have fear about this thing.
Oh, yeah. And I was a huge Dave Ramsey fan. You know, I fully bought into the, you know, you work for 40 years, you have a huge pile of money, and then if you're lucky, that'll spin off enough interest where you can lead a meager lifestyle. And that's best case scenario.
Right.
So but something didn't smell right about that. I mean, my entire working life. So I knew there was something else out there. And of course, you know, reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, listening to you on the Bigger Pockets podcast, talking about the freedom number, it kind of changed the game for me. So for me, it was really as simple as just having a, you know, buying lunch from my financial planner and dropping the bomb on her that I was going to pull all my money out. And she was a friend too. So that was a tough conversation, but she, you know, she just understood. And I showed her, you know, my plans and the ROI comparison, and she really couldn't argue with it. I mean, she did try to put up a fight saying, you know, well, real estate's risky. And I just countered with, you know, especially, you know, in the Midwest, real estate is probably one of the safest places to put your money. So, and I said, you know, well, I don't even know what companies I'm investing in, honestly. And I have no say in how those companies are run. You know, then these mutual funds that she had me in, you know, no, absolutely no say in the ROI on those companies and what I had invested in. So, you know, really, when you look at it like that, it was a pretty easy decision.
That's amazing. So, what was her comeback when, you know, when she said when she asked you that question and she said, you know, it seems so risky. When you said, well, it's actually the least risky investment you can make. What did she say?
She tried to just – it was kind of a weak counter argument. She didn't really have one, and she just basically said it was risky and just kind of repeated that, and then talked about the crash and all that. And I said, well, honestly, and here locally and in the Midwest, we're sort of immune from the crash. So really that is – that mitigates the risk of anything. So
right.
She really didn't have a good reply to that. So she didn't try to fight me any further. And she helped me, and we're still friends, and we're still in a networking group together. And I still, you know, give her referrals and things like that for people that want to invest traditionally. So it worked out all right. And so I just pulled all the money out, set aside money for the taxes and penalties. And actually another crucial step of this too, is I got a relationship with a local, investing or a lender that's friendly to investors. it was another recommendation from some of my fellow investors here locally. So that helped too, because I was able to, you know, then get loans for some of the properties here locally. So I could, you know, kind of scale up a little quicker.
That's great. And of course, I don't want to disparage, you know, investing in certain financial vehicles for retirement. You know, I still have a 401k and, you know, we do a loan to ourselves every year. But I have to say, if I could take that money out, I would absolutely take it fully out if I could. You know, we have some other investment vehicles as well, some, you know, self-directed IRAs and things like that. So I don't want to be disparaging at all. And there's certainly a great place for financial advisors in this whole space, and you know, bringing in rental properties as part of your overall portfolio is still a great strategy as well.
Yeah, and for me, I kind of just went all in, and that's kind of my personality. And for me, the goal is to live off the income. So I knew that I didn't want to have a self-directed IRA because you can't pull the income out. So for me, I'm trying to convert. And just to give you a little backstory, you being a self-employed photographer, you know, that's risky. I mean, that is definitely not, you know, it's a pretty tough industry, and it's about as active as income gets. I mean, if I do not shoot every day, I'm not making income. So that really puts some clarity to it. Mm-hmm. So my goal is to convert as much active income to passive income as possible and live off that.
Well, I want to talk about that because I've actually a few of our investors who purchase properties through us are, you know, are self-employed and they are photographers. I mean, I hear this, you're not the first. And, you know, they're working for themselves. They run their own personal sort of small business. Either they're shooting weddings or they are shooting, you know, maybe they're even shooting real estate or they're shooting magazines or they're shooting different things like that. How important was it, or what did you discover as you went down the real estate path, that this would help you on your taxes now with real estate?
Yeah, and that's something I'm still educating myself on. I know that it's going to be hugely beneficial. And honestly, this is my first year as an investor. So it's all going to, you know, I've been talking to some local tax people and CPAs that I know as well. So I know that it's going to be hugely beneficial.
Yeah.
I just can't articulate exactly, you know, the details on that until I have all that figured out. But
I know it's going to be a game changer. Yeah, it's going to be a game changer. Just,
I mean, even listening to the last few episodes, talking to the Rich Dad Poor Dad tax advisor that you had on recently, you know, I got a lot of great information there. So I know that I'm going down the right path, and hopefully eliminate most of my tax liability, if not all.
Right. Yeah. You're certainly with six properties and this being your first year investing, I think you're going to be just, there's going to be a huge smile on your face come tax time this year.
The amount of money that's gone out has been a lot, you know, because the startup cost of acquiring all these properties. So.
Yeah. So it's a great way to mitigate your overall taxes with your photography business. That's great. I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned about these loans. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening or driving right now who are listening to the show thinking, oh, I want Josh, talk about these loans that you got with your local, because you know, the properties that we do, through Morris Invest, you know, very often they're lower. And so, you know, a lot of local banks are not inclined to do loans. So most of our, you know, most of our customers pay cash or they pull money in 401k or home equity line of credit. That's how we do it personally, or we get private financing. With these loans specifically, how did you structure them? And did you find, you said you found a local bank. Is that what you did?
Yeah, it was a referral from another local investor. He knew that this gentleman was very investor friendly and he would kind of work with me because with being self-employed, if I go into any big box bank, Wells Fargo, et cetera, it's very difficult. I don't meet any of their check boxes that they need to, you know, give you a loan. So I met with this gentleman and he was able to work, you know, with my income statements, my profit and loss statements, you know, my credit score, obviously it was decent too. That helped. So basically with 20% down, and as long as the properties aren't too expensive, basically anything under $150,000, he will kind of give me a thumbs up on that regardless. As you know, I can just get a quick pre-approval from him when I'm looking to make an offer on any of those. So basically how he structures them is 5-year, you know, put 20% down, 5-year amortized over 20 years with a balloon at the end of 5 years. So that's kind of how I've structured the four up here that I've purchased.
That's great. That's great. Well, you know, obviously you took action, dove right in. I'm sure we have a lot of new investors who are thinking about getting started for the first time with real estate investing. What advice would you have for them if they're thinking about getting started?
I would say definitely do your research, educate yourself, but you're never going to learn more quickly than by doing it. So don't be afraid to dive in. You know, I'd definitely say schedule a call with you. I mean, that was huge for me as well, because you said, well, maybe, you know, your best ROI isn't in your area. And, you know, that was a game changer for me. You know, just to, because, and I do live in a decent market, but, you know, because I am in the Midwest, but if I was in somewhere, you know, more expensive, or, you know, like California or something like that, you know, investing in the Midwest would be a huge game changer. So I would definitely say schedule a call with you and just chat about it and get all your questions answered. But definitely take some action. That's my number one tip that I can say.
That's great. Well, Josh, I really appreciate it. And it's been great watching you grow in this journey. I mean, 6 properties. Where do you think you'll be next year?
That's funny, because I sort of moved the goalposts. Initially, as I stated earlier, I'm 44, and initially my goal was to replace all my active income with passive income by the time I was 50. So I gave myself 6 years, but I now have moved that to the end of 2017. So
that's great.
Yeah, that's my new goal now. So you know, I'm about halfway there with 6. So if I can get up to 12. By the end of the year, by the end of next year, that's really my goal.
And it can happen very, very fast. I think for a lot of people, they think, oh, is this a 20-year thing? And I have to say to investors when we talk to them and our team talks to them, no, it can happen in a few short years. Just getting,
It's interesting too, because just, you know, like I got my income statement yesterday from the 2 properties I have through you, money deposited in my bank. I mean, and then my local property manager deposited my rents for the other ones locally here a few days earlier. And it's already changing my financial existence, you know, just in the short few months since I've acquired rentals. I mean, just the amount of money coming in, it's already relieving some of the pressure on me to generate that income weekly. My wife stays home as well. So, you know, it is all on me to generate all the income. So that's definitely a fire lit under me. That caused me to definitely take action quickly. So
I love it. Our income statements from our properties that we own as well, my wife and I, and just to see that rent coming in, knowing that it's passive. You know, I was traveling. I was out in Cleveland at the, you know, the Republican National Convention up at 2 a.m. and craziness. And to know that while I'm out there doing other things, that there's passive income coming into the bank account, it's just an absolute game changer.
Exactly.
Well, Josh, it's been a real treat catching up with you here on the show. And I, like you, had to move my goalpost a little bit. It's been funny. I thought, okay, I'm going to be done when I'm 50, and I'm 39 now. And I just talked to my wife and some close circle of friends, and I said, just looking at the landscape, I think by the time that I'm 42, that is my goal now, to have it fully done, fully baked, you know. And so it's funny how quickly that goalpost can change and you move it, because you realize how simple it can be if you just stay focused in acquiring those properties.
And it's a real snowball effect too.
Right. Yeah, it just happens, and you're able to pull that money, keep, you know, burning and churning and keeping it rolling. So wonderful. It's been great to watch your journey, Josh, and a real treat to have you here on the show. And I look forward to talking with you soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for sharing your story. And thanks to all of you. And everything we talked about in today's show is available in our show notes page. If you just go to morrisinvest.com/podcast, Josh's episode will be there. We will have links to the things that we were talking about in today's episode. And it'll be great to have you back here on the podcast tomorrow. You know, we publish this show every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we've got some great episodes lined up. And you can check out some of the episodes we were talking about here on the show that Josh was bringing up, like Tom Wheelwright's episode 22 and 19 for taxes, if you're interested in diving into that. Some really helpful and great advice there. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you back here next time on another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Much love to you all.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.